Annually, about 2.5 million people sustain a traumatic brain injury, which can lead to disability and even death. It is the leading cause of death and disability in children and adults from age 1 to 44, that according to the Brain Trauma Foundation. This year, UW-Eau Claire was awarded a grant to expand access to services for people with traumatic brain injuries, aiding in the effort to strengthen advocacy efforts and increase access to information, referrals, and resources. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Today, we hear about the advocacy efforts underway and the way this grant will help people in Wisconsin communities navigate their lives. Audrey Nelson is the Executive Director of the Traumatic Brain Injury Alliance of Wisconsin. She has a firsthand perspective with brain injuries as well. Audrey, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you.
Also with us today is Dr. Jerry Heppner. Dr. Heppner is Professor of Communication Sciences and Disorders at UW-Eau Claire. Dr. Heppner, thank you so much for being here today as well.
Thank you.
Well, I want to start a little bit by talking about your respective roles in not only this grant program, but the outreach that goes on at UW-Eau Claire. Dr. Heppner, let's start with you. What is your connection with this whole program?
Yeah, actually, Audrey and I started working together almost 30 years ago. I worked at the Mayo Clinic here in Eau Claire at that time, clinically as a speech-language pathologist, and was really involved in brain injury rehabilitation at that point. Fast forward several years, and I went back to get my PhD and work at the university. And we've done a lot in terms of community-based programming for people with brain injuries. And that really continues and is expanded as a part of this grant. My other role in the grant is really research surrounding the needs of individuals from Wisconsin with brain injuries and their families and so forth, and what we can do to meet those needs.
Right. And Audrey, what is the Brain Injury Alliance of Wisconsin? Tell us what that is and what the role of that is today.
Mm-hmm. We're an advocacy group that has been around since around 1980-81, and we have a support group network across the state, and we provide an annual conference that it will be our 35th conference coming up this May. And we do information and referral, we answer the phone calls, we talk to people, and we do advocacy with public policy.
So Audrey, you're based in Eau Claire, but you have a statewide role. I mean, this is
yes.
Communities all over the place. Okay.
Yes, it's all over the place. We had offices previously in Milwaukee and Madison, but this is where I've been for a long time, and also Jerry, and it just worked really well with the resources that the university was able to provide for us and our long-term relationship that it worked to our everyone's benefit to move the office to Eau Claire, to UW-Eau Claire.
I'm really curious what a speech language pathologist does.
Well, first I'll give you the overview and then my specific role in brain injury rehabilitation. So speech language pathologists work in a number of different settings. So the schools in birth to three kind of context, in hospitals, in long-term care facilities. There is the pediatric side of things, which is really focused on language development and speech development, those kinds of impairments. And the medical side of things, which is really focused on acquired injuries and degenerative injuries. So strokes and traumatic brain injuries and dementias and Parkinson's disease, and really focusing on communication and cognition and swallowing disorders in those different contexts. And my area of specialty is really in helping people with cognitive communication disorders. So people with brain injuries and dementias, and really focusing on helping them to re-engage or remain engaged in everyday life in a meaningful way, working on memory, working on attention, and problem solving, those kinds of things.
And you're a professor of communication sciences and disorders at UW-Eau Claire. So what are some of the courses your department offers in that kind of area?
Yeah, we offer courses from the undergraduate level in basic anatomy and physiology of the speech and hearing mechanism, acoustics, language development, stuttering, speech sound disorders, or what we'd call phonological disorders, augmentative and alternative communication. At the graduate level, I teach courses, and also in undergrad, I should say, neurological anatomy and physiology, those sorts of things. At the graduate level, I teach courses in counseling and acquired cognitive disorders and swallowing disorders, but there's also coursework in aphasia, a language disorder caused by stroke, pediatric kind of language development, speech development, voice disorders. So it's a really broad range of areas.
That sounds very interesting, and a really wide range of areas with respect to this this field. Audrey, I want to ask you some personal questions now, because I know that you have a very personal connection to this issue. So tell us about that.
42 years ago, this last October, and I was 18, a freshman in college, and it was my first weekend home. And I was in a car accident with four other of my friends. One was my brother. And I had experienced a penetrating frontal lobe injury, meaning that something went into my forehead or went through my skull into my right frontal lobe. And I needed brain surgery that evening. And and the neurosurgeon talked to my parents, and it didn't sound very good for me at that point. But I also had other injuries. I had burns and a crushed foot and burns on my hands and things like that too. So it was a lot. And my brother was in the accident, so my parents had to manage his care as well. And he had burns and other broken bones. So,
How long did your recovery take?
That is one of the questions that I get stumped with quite frequently, actually, when people say, well, how long did it take you to get better? And I go, does that mean I'm better? So I like to think I'm still continuing to get better even after all these years. And to be honest, it took a while. It took a number of years and a lot of accommodating and changing things and maybe doing things differently than other people. I was home from the hospital a week afterwards, but it was because the doctor said to me, we can't really do anything for you here, because they didn't have the same kind of rehab options that they have now. And they said, you're just really taking up space. You should just go sleep at home. They kind of said that. So I went home and I wasn't able to remember ongoing events. I didn't realize what I had just said. I repeated myself. I couldn't watch TV because it was too confusing. The pictures changed too fast. I couldn't read for very long, because it just made me so tired to read a paragraph. And I slept a lot. Plus, I had recovering from brain surgery and burns. I mean, it was just a lot going on. And it took me quite a while to be able to get over some of those injuries. I still have issues with my foot that was crushed, but I did register for class actually at UW-Eau Claire the following fall. So my accident was 81, and I registered as a freshman here at the University of Eau Claire in 1982 against the wishes of my neurosurgeon, but they had left my student loan and grant money in my bank account. Nobody had thought to take that back from me. And so I used it to put a payment down on UW-Eau Claire, and they let me in based on the fact that I was a transfer student from a school in Minnesota into here. So I'm sure if they would have interviewed me, they might not have thought it was a great idea at the time. So, but anyway, I started here as a freshman, and I have to say that going to the university was sort of a soft landing for me. I didn't go to rehab, but this was sort of a rehab experience for me, where I could take things as I could do them. And I just attended class the best I could. And I had to have my class schedule on a binder in front of me so that I remembered where I was going next all the time. And I took very good notes in class because I really still couldn't read. I ended up with an undergrad in social work and business and a graduate degree in vocational rehabilitation. And I can tell you that in all of those years of schooling, I only read one textbook because my reading issues, they continued. And I still don't read very well. When I mean very well, I can read and I can read, you know, at a higher level, but it just is harder for me to do long term and for to read very much at one time.
You said that you went to university against the wishes of your neurosurgeon. What was his concern?
Well, in 1981, if somebody experienced a penetrating right frontal lobe injury, it was very unlikely that they would consider that for them to go back to university. Right frontal lobes are responsible for your executive functioning, planning, executing, getting through space and time appropriately, getting places on time and planning. And I think I said that already, but anyway, yeah. So Dr. Heppner can probably speak to that more specifically, but back in 1981, they would have said, no, your right frontal lobe is really where your studentness is. So they would have said, it's probably not in the cards. They told my parents that I would probably never go to work, that I would not go back to school, and that I would likely be in their care for the rest of my life.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Jerry, talk a little bit more about those right frontal lobe injuries. Can you add to what Audrey was saying about what is typical when somebody has that type of injury?
Sure. That's a really great question. So the frontal lobes carry out what we call executive function. So those are the highest order cognitive functions in our brain. That allows us to make decisions, to reflect on our own abilities and self-assess, to regulate our own abilities, to kind of problem solve complex problems. And again, that is, as Audrey said, that's a really common area of deficits after a frontal brain injury. And I think one of the things that's important to put into context is every brain injury is a little bit different, and every person that experiences a brain injury is different. Audrey and I were talking earlier about people's kind of function prior to the brain injury, their premorbid function, and that goes a long way in predicting how successful their recovery will be. So people who have more cognitive reserve and abilities, which obviously Audrey did, have a better chance at recovery, and other individuals who maybe had less of that may not recover as thoroughly. The other thing that I think is important to say, though, is that brain injury recovery is something that is ongoing and that might not happen within the first year of recovery. It might be something that takes multiple years for them to continue to grow and to experience that improvement. And sometimes decisions or predictions are made based on early brain injury recovery, which may not reflect their ability to recover in the long haul as well. One of the reasons we're so passionate about really helping people in the chronic stages of brain injury recovery is that we believe they can continue to improve and continue to contribute to society and to their families and so forth.
We'll continue this discussion in just a moment. You're listening to Audrey Nelson and Dr. Jerry Heppner on Route 51. We're discussing an initiative at UW-Eau Claire that supports people with traumatic brain injuries and just what traumatic brain injuries are all about. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shereen Seward. Dr. Jerry Heppner and Audrey Nelson are with us today, a discussion on traumatic brain injuries and a program to help connect people with those injuries to services and information. It's unique for UW Eau Claire. Audrey, we were talking about your personal story and how difficult was it for you to navigate classes, and did you find yourself surprised? I mean, you went not only just for an undergrad degree, you went beyond that.
As I recall experiencing it, actually just being, our office now is literally in the same building as the social work classes that I took 40 years ago. So it's kind of, I just imagine what that 19-year-old, 20-year-old girl must have been experiencing as she's navigating these halls. And I remember really, it's really one step at a time. And if you would have told me how hard it was going to be, I might not have tried. If you would have told me that I was going to do it, I might have said, of course I am. And I'll also say that one of the things that Jerry had mentioned is that the ability to kind of plan and assess and see what is reasonable, I benefited perhaps from that being damaged in my brain, meaning that if I would have had to been, say, what we call in brain injury, more realistic about my chances of making it through school, or if I would have had to been realistic in my assessment of my ability and my state that I found myself in, I think I would have lapsed into a very severe depression. And I don't think that person could have survived and certainly not have thrived, just because that was an awful lot to have been told when you're 18.
Traumatic brain injuries are all different. I mean, there's no one size fits all. So what happened with Audrey is not necessarily what would happen to somebody else. Can you talk a little bit about the range of brain injuries for me, please?
Every individual is different, and the way that a brain injury affects them and the way that they recover is different. Their social networks, their family, their environment all affect their recovery. So that's important to consider as well. The severity of damage and the nature of the brain structures that are affected. So one of the things that's really consistent in brain injuries is something called diffuse axonal injury, which happens as the brain is shook around and wiring neurons between different structures are broken and severed and damaged. And that's pretty consistent with most brain injuries, but the degree of that damage and the degree of more focal damage where there's an area of bruising on the brain can really vary from one injury to another, and it can affect different functions of the brain. So some people may have more language-based impairments, some people may have more cognitive impairments, some people may have more motor impairments than others, or visual or auditory impairments. It kind of depends on the specific part of the brain that is affected. And then, as I said, the range of severity runs from a concussion, which is a brain injury, to people who are in prolonged comas. So from the very mild end of things to the very severe end of things. And all of those things contribute to recovery. But I will tell you that I've had people who have been in a coma for several months who return to work and life with a family and those kinds of things. And I've had people with more mild injuries who have big disruptions to their everyday life and can't return to work. So a lot of it depends on, there are just so many factors, but a lot of it depends on that person's status before the brain injury, their psychological response to the brain injury, their family's support, and a million other variables.
Audrey, I'm curious what your doctors told you about your injury and what to expect. Did they give you any sense of whether or not you were going to recover? Was it a guessing game for them? What were you hearing from them?
Well, I was hearing that things were pretty grim as far as being, I mean, it feels like I was raised to be a college student. That was my expectation to go to school. And they were saying, no, you can't go back to school and you probably will live with your parents for the rest of your life. I don't know if there's a worse sentence that an 18-year-old can hear, but that's one of those things. And I I think I had to say from within, no, that's not true. That's not me. And, but on the other hand, it is true for many people that does happen. And I would say my very same injury that happens maybe today, 40 years later, is very, the trajectory and what we're told now, what people with brain injuries are told now are, is very different. And they know more. I would have been I would have definitely been in therapy. I would have been in speech therapy. I would have been in other different kinds of therapies that was, that were not really available or prevalent in 1981. So my experience then is different than the experience today. But the thing that is the same today is that brain injuries are still awful. And they still take away a lot of abilities that you took for granted before the injury. And they also just kind of have you reevaluate and reassess what's important and what is and what you're going to go after and what your goals are going to be. It can really be, and it doesn't matter whether, like Jerry was saying, whether it's a mild brain injury or a very severe injury, there are still many hurdles to get over. And the more support you have from family and people at support groups and conferences and educational opportunities that, that can be provided is really what helps people get through.
Did your personality change? I have heard that that does happen to some people.
Yeah, that would be, that's interesting because I was pretty young when this happened, but of course I would have had a personality at 18. I think I had, I definitely had more energy and I was probably more spontaneous and more, I think I became more serious and, well, just, and when you're so tired and when you can't think as clearly as you did before, your personality is, of course, bound to change, or your expression of your personality changes because you just don't, you don't have the ability to do it. So, and I wrote a poem right after my brain injury, only because people kept looking at me and thinking that maybe I was okay because I laughed a lot, but truly it was kind of a manic laugh. And the title of my poem is "Don't Listen to My Laughter. It Only Hurts Too Much to Cry." And I just think that back then I just scribbled that down as an 18-year-old and I folded that poem up and put it away. But it was my way of taking out my response to what other people were saying to me and just saying, you don't understand. You don't know what it's like. I can't really tell you how I feel because it hurts too much. It's too scary. And I'm too tired. I'm just too tired to tell you what is really happening inside. So I just really want people to remember that above all is that whether a person acts the same or acts radically differently, they are the same person inside. They just may be having a hard time expressing that now.
And how scary at 18. I mean, in your 50s, it's hard enough to handle major changes like that. But a teenager, how did you cope?
Well, over the years, there were different, I used to have one of the common side effects of brain injury is post-traumatic headaches. And I used to have very, very bad headaches for quite a few years afterwards. And it was really hard. And I really had to get to the place where I had to put the pain aside and say, kind of not today. And some days it was like, okay, I'm going to put my feet on the floor and that's going to be the accomplishment for this minute. And then I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do the next minute. And some days are like that. And some days you accomplish a whole lot and you're like, wow, that was a good day, but I'm going to pay for it tomorrow probably. Mm-hmm. So, there was a lot of that, a lot of those days, but also a lot of love and a lot of encouragement from my family and the man who was to become my spouse, who I was married to for many years. If it wasn't for him or people like him in my life, I I don't know what would have happened. As an example, I said I was a student here at UW-Eau Claire, but I was a married student off campus, and I had a home to go back to be whoever I was, and to fall off the cliff every day if I needed to, where if I had been a student at the on campus or not married, I think there would have been a whole lot of other variables that would have come into place that would have been very, very hard for me to manage.
Wow, what a story. What a story. Jerry, I mean, Audrey, your interest in traumatic brain injuries is, I mean, obviously you have that connection. But Jerry, what about you? What is it that drew you to this field?
Yeah, I'm really drawn by interactions with people and really seeing them move from this state of everything being turned upside down in their life to being able to help them to re-engage in life and to find meaning in life again. And that's different for every person, but as long as your focus is on helping that person to reconnect and to re-engage in life, I think you're moving in the right direction. I interacted in my training programs with a lot of different kinds of communication disorders, and something about the challenge of working with traumatic brain injury really spoke to me. And just that need for kind of that lifelong, long-term plan to help those individuals to remain connected to other individuals with brain injuries and support systems so that they could thrive.
Audrey, how difficult is it for people suffering from these injuries to get connected with the resources, information they need to really succeed and lead healthy lives and moving forward?
It's really hard for a number of reasons. You know, the cognitive impairment that comes with brain injury makes it hard. The fatigue issues make it hard for individuals themselves to seek and access information. I have books here on my shelf in my office that are the many stories of survivors of brain injuries and their families. And we have guides to brain injury and things like that. And a lot of times I'll give the guide to somebody and they'll say, why didn't I have this a year ago? Why didn't I have this when this first happened? I'm like, well, they were here. But that gap between the information that's available and getting it into the hands of people when they can use it, when they're able to use it, that is in fact what we're all about at the Brain Injury Alliance and through this new grant. So that's part of what we're trying to do.
Let's talk a little bit more about that grant. Jerry, how will this grant help improve access to information for people? What is it going to do?
Yeah, one of the things that we want to do is revitalize the support group network that Wisconsin once had, a really thriving support group network with over 38 groups. And over the course of the years, and much due to the effects of the pandemic, that support group network really took a hit over the last several years, to the point where there were very few in operation. So we're hoping to kind of revitalize that system, but also to provide more unique supports for a variety of individuals. So I'll give the example of adolescents. They have different needs than an adult with a brain injury, and going to a group with adults with brain injuries for an adolescent may feel like they're a fish out of water and really not a good fit for what they need. I think one of the things that the pandemic did was connected a much wider range of individuals. And while a small region or local community may not have multiple adolescents, there are many within the state who can benefit from interacting with each other. And that you could make that statement for several kind of subgroups of individuals with brain injuries. You know, very young brain injuries where the parents are the ones that need the support. You know, when we're talking pediatric brain injuries or a wide range. So I think that's one of the ways that we're going to do it. Part of the research that we're doing is really to look at service access and utilization so that we can meet the needs of a lot of unmet, underserved populations within the state. I was just looking at some of the statistics, and We know that in Wisconsin, there's just a little bit over 200,000 individuals with brain injury a year, and that those brain injuries don't go away over time. Many of them remain an issue. And those numbers exclude ER, they exclude primary care and urgent care. So those are just hospitalizations. And yet we're not serving nearly that many people, which tells us, yeah, we're doing good things, but we're not serving everyone's needs. And there are certain groups of individuals who just don't have access or are not willing to take advantage of the services that are out there because they don't feel it's a fit for them personally. I was looking at the pediatric numbers, and we have about 3,000 pediatric brain injuries a year. And those are the ones that are reported through hospitalizations. And only about 288 students were served last year in the school systems with brain injuries. So we're not even coming close to serving these individuals. So uncovering those needs, doing a better job of educating people, having a follow-up system for resource facilitation and contact with individuals who have brain injury is really important. I think one of the challenges with brain injury is because of the nature of brain injury in that first year, most people think that they're not going to need any services. I'm going to be the one who doesn't need any of these services. So don't even bother me with groups or other ongoing therapies because I don't need it. And part of the problem with their brain injury is that they don't recognize those needs until later on. So having a system that gets them back into the services that they need when they're ready to accept those and who kind of consistently follows them so that we can provide those supports is really important, because a year or two out, you may not even remember or have access to the information that you once received as you were discharged from the hospital, and it went into a bag and eventually landed in, you know, your garbage or in a file cabinet somewhere.
You're listening to Dr. Jerry Heppner and Audrey Nelson, our guests today on Wisconsin Public Radio, discussing traumatic brain injuries and efforts at UW-Eau Claire to connect people with services and information, thanks in part to a federal grant announced earlier this year. I'm Shereen Sewer. This is Route 51 on WPR. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Sewert, Audrey Nelson of the Traumatic Brain Injury Alliance, and Dr. Jerry Heppner, Professor of Communication Sciences and Disorders at UW-Eau Claire, are with us for the hour. Audrey, why is this such a good fit for UW-Eau Claire?
That's a very good question. And one of the reasons is certainly the relationship that the university has had with brain injury services, specifically Jerry and Tom Sather and some other people here, but over the years. But during the pandemic, like Jerry was saying, the support groups have kind of were very broken up because of not being able to meet, and most of them met at hospitals, which were certainly not hosting support group meetings, and it was really hard for them to maintain any sense of community. At UW-Eau Claire, though, they were able to help two groups transition to Zoom meetings very, very quickly, and that was very helpful in helping the groups survive and continue and actually thrive. And also through that, we organized, and through Jerry and some other people, we organized a poetry brain injury support group. It started out as a workshop on poetry writing, and it was all people with brain injury getting together and talking about poetry, of all things. And I have to say, I was a little reluctant at first. I participated in it, and I in no way thought of myself as a poet, but the writing assignments, the writing prompts and everything, I have to tell you, it's probably the most therapeutic and insightful and growth experience I've had in my entire 42 years following brain injuries. So, and the outcome of that has been, we published this book called I Don't Think I Did This Right, was published right out of the gate, like in 2021. And then just this year in 2023, we have a new poetry book called Poetry is Chocolate. And it's all poems by people with brain injury and aphasia. So that has been very exciting. And we've presented on that at various conferences. And Jerry and I presented in Dublin earlier this year about poetry and brain injury. And I think that relationship and that sort of willingness to be out of the box and think of things that really can help people grow and just give access to more creative expression is why UW-Eau Claire is a great fit for us to start this new venture together.
Jerry, I have to know, why poetry? There's got to be a science behind it.
Yeah, there is a science behind it. Actually, we run a camp for individuals with aphasia, which is a language disorder that follows stroke. So these individuals can know what they want to say and understand everything that they did before. They haven't lost any intelligence, but they lose that ability to say it the way that they want to say it. So we invited a poet from the Los Angeles area, Brendan Constantine, who had a real interest in helping individuals with aphasia and other neurogenic disorders to express themselves in this modality. And as the pandemic started, and I was worried about individuals with brain injuries in Wisconsin becoming socially isolated, I thought, maybe I'll reach out to Brendan and see if we can do 2-3 weeks of this. And it, 3.5 years later, it continues to go. I think from my perspective, the science of it is that part of my work is in the area of counseling. And one of the approaches that we use is the narrative approach, where you tell your story, you reframe your life, you kind of reflect on those experiences. And I knew that poetry had the potential to do that for individuals. I had no idea how powerful it was going into it and what an impact it would make on the people. And I think the challenge is that you hear poetry and you think, oh, this stuffy Shakespearean kind of experience. But it is not at all. It's really accessible. And I would say that people with brain injuries and aphasia are uniquely qualified to write poetry because they sometimes have restricted access to language and words, but that makes them come up with some really interesting combinations and different ways of looking at the world while they are processing their own brain injury and stroke recovery. And it has just been remarkable to be a part of that experience and to see how much growth that produces in individuals in that long-term recovery.
Audrey, how does the poetry feel to you? I mean, what does that make you, what does it do for you? What does it make you feel?
I have to say that, poetry by itself, like if you said, came into my office and said, Audrey, write a poem on this, but it wasn't as part of the community of the other poets that are involved in this group, it wouldn't have been the same. It is a sense of this community of us writing and uttering our basically soul cries that, come from within. And you don't even know when you're just doing a 5-minute prompt and you're thinking, oh, this is so ridiculous. I don't know how I could write a poem in 5 minutes. And then you throw something on the page, and it becomes the most incredible, heart-rendering thing you have ever read. And not only do you get to express that to people who also feel that way, you get to hear their heart renderings. And it's just so powerful. And I can't, even though we're virtual and we all do this from our homes, the connection we have to each other in this process I don't even know what the word is, except I once said the synchronicity of souls is what it feels like to me.
That's beautiful. Jerry, how do you feel when you're involved in this process? I mean, how fulfilling is it for you personally to be involved in a project like that?
Yeah, I think it's really fulfilling in so many different ways. One of the things is that it is therapy. We see people 3 years later since they began, who some of them barely spoke a word, or had trouble writing at all. And now they're speaking up in group, they're sharing things, they're doing public poetry readings. We've done international poetry readings through an organization called Aphasia Access, where, you know, where we spoke and read to hundreds of people in the United States and Canada and the United Kingdom and Australia. And that's something that I never could have anticipated, but it's so empowering and provides such a sense of self-worth and renewed identity for these individuals that it's really powerful. And I think the other piece of it is that my students get to be a part of this, and they get to learn in this really authentic way. That's one of the values of having UW-Eau Claire connected with the Brain Injury Alliance and the community-based programming, is that we have students who, from my perspective, need an authentic experience, not just me telling them about brain injury and stroke recovery, and then providing supports to them, scaffolding, engaging them in something meaningful and authentic. So it's really a win-win that we've got all of these unmet needs of people with brain injury and other acquired brain injuries like stroke. And I get to see both sides of it. I get to see the individuals with brain injuries recover, but I get to watch my students move from novice to really probably at a level that many professionals don't reach. And I know Audrey will agree, they come out of there with a unique skill set that not every speech language pathology student has. And a lot of practicing speech language pathologists don't get to that point of truly understanding the meaning of supporting individuals and re-engaging them in something meaningful in their life. So I just get to be a part of all of that, which is pretty, it's quite a privilege.
I think it's interesting when we talk about the pandemic and all it took away from us and how mm-hmm. difficult it was. If there was one good thing that came out of it, it's that it forced us to connect with people in different ways. And that opens some doors, too. I mean, now you're talking about being able to connect with people all over the place through this virtual space that may never have come about before that.
I was just going to say that I also wanted to give kudos to Jerry. Jerry's very good at helping the students get over some of the barrier of the us and them kind of thing. Like, we are the therapist, you are the patient or client. And I think Jerry's really good at helping them learn to let the patient or the client or the person lead where they need to go. And I just appreciate that also.
There's a lot of focus on concussions, both in high school sports and in professional sports. Has that been beneficial in kind of allowing people to talk more openly about the dangers of brain injuries? Jerry, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think whenever you have that public awareness increasing, it's good for brain injury in general. I think there are some misconceptions that happen in the sports world in terms of recovery. And you know, whenever I hear someone say, oh, they're going to make a full recovery, and I know the extent of their brain injury, I know what that means in reality, that brain injury is for most people a lifelong, life-changing event. Even individuals with concussions have consequences that can persist for a long time, and then that can kind of come up when they're fatigued or when they're stressed and things like that. But I do think the net effect is the more awareness of brain injury, the better. And that helps people to relate to the fact that, you know, brain injuries are acquired through falls and through car accidents and through domestic violence and a number of different ways outside of sports. But again, I really think as we gain more awareness in general, that just increases the knowledge that's out there for people to understand the everyday effects of brain injury.
Audrey, what do you think about the kind of national conversation about concussions and other brain injuries that really has emerged over the last few years?
I think it's good. I think, I mean, we got a lot of criticism at the beginning when I was part of the organization, the Brain Injury Association of America, when they first approached the NFL and or talking to them about brain injuries, there was a lot of resistance. And I remember even here locally when we had a Chippewa Valley concussion group, and there was just a lot of resistance to the effects of concussion and how the treatment protocols. And when I think of where we've come in a relatively short time, 20, 30 years, it's been amazing. And when you're watching an NFL game and they're saying they're in concussion protocol now, and I'm like, yes, they're in concussion protocol. That's great. They don't always follow the concussion protocol, I might add, but still there's an awareness of it where before there was not. I mean, as a Green Bay Packer fan, I remember when Brett Favre was put back out on the field even after, and he would say, I don't remember the rest of that game.
Oh yeah. And you could see him, kind of like stumbling around on the field, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, take him out. You know?
Yes. But, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's been amazing. I mean, really, when we talk about where we've come in those 20, ever since, even since Brett Favre was playing, I mean, and he himself has talked about his own concussions. He thinks he's had over 1,000 concussions, and he was a keynote at our conference in 2019. So, you know, that's amazing. That's some pretty good progress. We still have a ways to go. I mean, people don't need to associate football and brain injury or brain injury and football, but brain injury is a thing. Like Jerry said, there's many different ways brain injury can happen. Domestic violence is one of those things that is getting more and more notice these days in our professional circles and things like that. But it's, of course, people have been getting hit in the head for a very long time, since the dawn of time. So, it's kind of good that brain injury is getting some focus. Hopefully we can come up with some really good opportunities for people to find resources and ways to make their days better, regardless of whether they have a brain injury or not.
We've got about 2 minutes left, and I one thing stood out that you said, Dr. Hepner, when somebody is told they're going to make a full recovery, and you hear that on TV, they're expected to make a full recovery. Does a brain ever fully recover?
Yeah, that's a really good question. One of the things I'll say, when you have a life-changing event like a traumatic brain injury, even if your brain recovered cognitively, you're going to be a different person because of that experience and everything that you've gone through. But things do change. You know, people make remarkable recovery. And you can see it kind of on the surface level that things look like they're pretty good. But fatigue is a factor and stress is a factor. And those are the moments when all of the struggles start bubbling up. And I think one of the hardest things for the general public to understand is that people with brain injury can look really good at one moment and look very different at the next moment, because of those kinds of things, because the environment is too noisy, or because they've not gotten enough sleep, or because they're in a really stressful or emotional kind of situation. And that's when the brain injury kind of rears its ugly head again. And for many people, those are the most frustrating moments, because people have a hard time understanding, like, if you can do it today, why can't you do it tomorrow? Because every day is different. And because there are, as Audrey said right from the start, there are good days and there are bad days, and there are good times of the day and bad times of the day. And brain injury affects people in that way. The more that we can re-engage them in life, we know that from a neuroplasticity standpoint, that really speaks to better recovery. And part of that's just helping people to not give up, to not withdraw and become socially isolated. Because when you're struggling, it's so easy to do that, to say it's just easier if I don't participate. But that just exacerbates the problem of a brain injury. So letting them know that's normal. It's normal to experience these things, and it's normal to struggle over the long haul. And the best way to cope with that is to re-engage and to do meaningful things and to continue to recover and stay connected.
I want to thank you both so much for being here today and sharing your stories and your thoughts with us. It has been a wonderful conversation. This is Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Our guests are Audrey Nelson and Dr. Jerry Heppner. Our producers today are Joy Ratch-Kramer and Ezra Wall. Our executive producer is Ezra Wall, who is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program, as well as our previous programs at WPR.org/Route 51 and on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.